Hey everyone, this is Steve Donahue with another episode of the Legacy Podcast, helping you build a multi-generational legacy of abundance. Today's episode is number 46, and what we're going to talk about today is the consumer side of a food legacy. More specifically, we're going to address six considerations for those who are not able to produce their own food, but want to be good stewards of the resources in the land that God has given to us. And so this is, I know not everybody is able to produce their own food or live on a farm or farmette or, you know, something like that, like we're doing, and not able to homestead. And so they need to purchase their food elsewhere. And so this is going to be helpful for you, but it's also helpful for those of us also just as a reminder. And, you know, even, you know, us, we still buy a lot of our food outside of our farm. So this will be good for everybody. But before we actually listen to that, I want to direct you to some of the business for today. First of all, make sure that you're registered as a user on the website. You can do that on the right column where it says register. That allows you to get email updates, program updates, comments. It allows you also to comment under each of the episodes under the comment section, which is great because it interacts and gives dialogue to the shows themselves and provides for other people to hear some other opinions and comments regarding the different episodes. So I encourage you to do that. But in order for you to do that, you need to be a registered user. So please register. And then that will also give you a way to know very quickly when our next shows are coming out, because you'll get an email update for that. And then also, I want to encourage you to follow us and share us on all the social media. We have outlets through Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube. And then also, if you like what this show is and what we're doing here, then consider becoming a Legacy Partner. A Legacy Partner costs $30 a year or $3 a month. And with that, you get about, right now, about $50 worth of value through a discount program and special features in the members page. It also allows you to support the show at less than a quarter an episode. So if you think this is worth more than 25 cents an episode and you want to have access to some of those benefits as a premium member or legacy partner, then I encourage you to check that out on the website and contribute to that. So that takes care of the business for today. And so why is it important for, or why is this topic important? Why is it important for us to understand some of the considerations that goes into purchasing food? Well, as I mentioned earlier, not everybody is able to produce significant amounts of their own food. Some people have gardens. Some people just have little gardens. Some people have larger gardens. Some people that have large gardens aren't able to produce enough protein, so they have to buy their meats elsewhere. And so all of us, to some extent, are still having to purchase some of our food outside the farm. There's very few people who are totally sufficient upon their farm. And so this is important for us to be able to evaluate and having some considerations as to, you know, what we are to do when it comes to purchasing our food. So if you're not producing the food yourself, that means somebody else is having to produce the food for you. And it's important to understand what they're doing and how you're getting that food to your plate. So here are six considerations to make note of and to start evaluating. First of all, consider your options. When it comes to food options, unless you're just going to go to the supermarket and not really consider where the food is from or what the food is doing or how it got there, anything like that, there's really two options. You can buy local or you can buy organic. Now, there are other means. Obviously, you can buy you know, some other labeled product in the supermarket, something like that. But if you're just going to the supermarket to buy just any ordinary brand, then really this show doesn't even apply to you. But if you're really trying to eat somewhat healthy, somewhat conscious of the circumstances surrounding your food, then, you know, it comes down to whether or not you want to emphasize organic or whether you want to emphasize local. And by organic, of course, I'm meaning the capital O, those that are designated by the government as organic. Now, we know that recently there has been, especially Joel Salatin has made mention of this, that there's been some legislative changes where the government is taking more responsibility for organic foods. And as a result of that, they, of course, providing different standards into that, and that anytime the government gets itself involved in something, the quality and everything goes down. And so organic is, it's been up for a long time, but I think it's becoming more and more an arm of the state. But nonetheless, that's a different issue. So considering our options, it's either organic or local. And, of course, under local, there are all different kinds of designations that different farms can have. And by local, I mean, you know, within driving distance to where the food comes. So it's not traveling from California to Boston, Massachusetts, or from, Florida to Montana, something like that. It's local. So it's, you know, within a driving distance of where you live now. So if you live, you know, like in Richmond, Virginia, then it would be, you know, the surrounding counties around that, that kind of thing. And so consider your options. That's the first thing. Second thing is consider the complexity of food production. And by that, I mean, we need to ask lots of questions. There are a lot of things that we don't know about the food that's being produced, and we need to be able to ask these kinds of questions of the farmer. If you go to a farmer's market, for example, and there's all different kinds of farmers there, it's important to ask different questions of the farmers so that you might know what kind of procedures they use. There are all kinds of labels. I'm going to talk about some of those in just a minute. There's all kinds of labels that people have placed upon food and upon farming methods and techniques and that kind of thing to try to classify themselves into certain categories that would be expressive to the consumer as to what they do. And sometimes these can be helpful and sometimes they can actually be a hindrance. The best way to be able to know about what your food is and how it's produced is to actually talk with the farmer about it and find out that specific farmer's techniques and how they operate. And so learn as much about the food and the producer as you can. Obviously, by asking questions, you can do this. You can also do research. Many farmers put on their website or put in local harvests or some other kind of source for local foods. They put a bio or some kind of description of how they operate their food and pictures and websites and things like that where you can access some of this information on your own. And then be aware of the various terms that are used to describe food and food production in the farmer's vocabulary, because sometimes they can be deceiving. Sometimes they're very accurate descriptions and other times they're not. And so also the terms change over time. Organic used to be the name for just, you know, regular grandma and grandpa type farming. And then it got taken over by large industry, large corporations and governments and that kind of thing. And now it's a totally different thing than what it was when it originally came out. So here are the various forms. I'm not going to describe them in a whole lot of detail. I'll probably do another show describing them more specifically. I'm just going to list them here. And you can do some further research on them to determine what it is you're looking for, how it's classified, and the benefits of it. So here they are: organic, all natural. Seems like everything seems to be all natural now. You can go, this is all natural this, all natural that. Well, that's not a very descriptive term. I did some research into what it means to be all natural. There's a broad range of identifying factors. And then naturally grown, grass-fed, grass-finished, free-range, cage-free, humanely treated, grain-fed, non-GMO. And then when it comes to seeds and things like that, you've got heirloom, hybrid, and then you've got hormone-free. Again, that goes back to animal products. You've got raw versus pasteurized milk. We should know the difference between that and why they're classified as that. And then in terms of farming practices, you've got no-till, you've got permaculture, sustainable, authentic. And, you know, as a consumer, I think it's important for you to know what all these different techniques mean, what the different classifications are, so that you can then say, okay, well, you know, I don't really care whether they're cage-free or free-range. I just want local chicken eggs. And so, you know, if that's what's important to you, then, you know, make that known. But certainly by understanding some of these concepts and some of these terminology, it helps us to be better consumers of the food that we eat. And then number three is consider the season and the location. You know, in our culture, we've gotten to where we expect certain foods year-round. For example, we might expect strawberries in January. Well, strawberries aren't grown in January unless you're in, you know, South Tropics or something like that, where you can maybe get them out during that time of year. But ordinarily, strawberries come out in May or June, that kind of thing. And so we need to be careful and consider what season it is and what our location is, and then buy accordingly. Now, I'm not saying that we should only eat what is native to our land. Most of us would starve in that regard, because there's very little that is actually native to our land that we eat on a regular basis in different geographical locations across the globe. And so, you know, it is important for us to be able to import different foods and more importantly, import different kinds of seeds to plant in our garden of those various kinds of foods. But consider the season and the location. We can't expect fresh strawberries in January. You can't really, in most parts of the South particularly, you can't expect lettuce in July. You know, fresh lettuce in Texas is hard to come by unless it's, you know, very early in the spring, very late in the fall, that kind of thing. And then, you know, it would be kind of crazy for someone who lives in Montana to expect fresh citrus year-round. And, you know, they can get citrus year-round in Montana, obviously, but it's not going to come from Montana. It's going to come from somewhere south of Florida or something like that, where it's actually can be grown in those times of year. And so, you know, consider the season and the location. If you want those things and you don't currently have them in season in your area, then you have to understand you are taking a step away from sustainability to be able to acquire those items. And I'm not saying that, you know, you have to do one or the other. I'm just saying that these are the factors that need to be considered in your decision. And number four is, consider the real cost of your food. By that I mean that much of the food that we eat in the grocery stores has been subsidized by the government through especially corn subsidies. So much is produced and is manufactured with corn as a component of it. And so because the corn is subsidized, the real cost of the food is not put into it. And so, you know, it's, you go to a farmer's market. It used to be you can go to a farmer's market and that's where you'd find the best prices on things. But that's not true anymore, because there's so many different subsidies and so many high volume manufacturing companies of various food products that it's hard to actually come by a situation where the food is at a reasonable price according to you know, normal standards. And then, you know, in addition to the corn subsidies, which, you know, is everywhere, and then you've got the corn that is actually feeding the cows and is feeding the chickens and these kinds of things, which brings down the price of the feed cost. If the feed was not subsidized, the price of these foods would go much higher. And so a lot of people don't want to pay the price that it costs to purchase the food without the subsidies. But that's not real food, and doesn't take into consideration important aspects of that. And so, for example, chicken, if you go to most restaurants, is the least expensive item on the menu. And if you go to the grocery store to get chicken, it's usually a whole lot less expensive than if you were to buy steak. And the reason for that is that there are so many subsidies in the grain that is fed to the chickens, versus the cows that, although many of them now are being finished in feedlots with corn, they still have difficulty with the whole concept of eating grain. And so the grass-fed beef should be less expensive than chicken. And then also there's the health consequences that are not taken into consideration. When you consume a lot of fake food, is what I call it, food that has been overly manufactured, food that's been subsidized, food that's not real food in the sense of the real cost or the real way of producing it, when you do that, it does not take into consideration the health consequences that result from such poor eating. And when you take that into consideration as well, the actual total cost of that food begins to come into more reasonable parameters. And then you've also got the real cost associated with huge volumes of manufacturing and production. So for an example, if you have done much reading or much studying on what takes place in a chicken manufacturing plant, you will realize that what they do is they have all these machines with augers that go in the back end of the chicken, and they basically auger out all of the guts. Well, as you might imagine, pulling out all those guts with the auger and squishing them all around, you're going to have crawls that get cut open. You're going to have bile that comes out. You're going to have intestines that have poop that come out. And so as a result of that, these chickens need to have some kind of bath. And so the industry has developed a way where they can dip these chickens into chlorine or Clorox, and that then kills off any kind of bacteria that might have gone in there. The food's certainly not clean, not even really even sterile, although the attempt is there. And so when we eat our chickens, we're not really taking into consideration this large manufacturing type system that goes into processing the food. If the food had to be processed by hand or through very simple machinery, the cost would be so much higher than it is today. And so, you know, in one way we benefit, but in reality, in long term, there's actually a disadvantage. And then, you know, the same thing can be similarly said about beef and the pink slime. You've probably heard about the pink slime before, and basically how that is filler that's mixed with the ground beef in particular, so that it has some Clorox in it again, so it kills off any kind of bacteria that was created as a result of the manufacturing procedures that they have in producing this beef. And then you've got huge machinery that's harvesting vegetables. And, you know, I can't help but think that when you've got this huge, huge equipment to harvest lettuce or spinach or something like that, that while it's harvesting, it's also harvesting other creatures and other animals and other items all over the farm that were intermixed within the grasses and within the greens or whatever it is. And so the health of the food is so much less, and the cost is artificially low at producing it because of all these subsidies and ways of doing things. And so the real cost of the food is not there. So that's something we need to consider. Then number five is consider food preservation. You know, it's one thing to say we can't eat in season, or that, you know, it's difficult to find food in its proper season. But at the same time, we can buy food that has been produced in bulk and learn to store it ourselves so that we can eat it throughout the year, even though it may not be seasonable. And so learn different food preservation skills. Here are just a few of them. Learn to dehydrate. There's all different kinds of information on the net for how you can build a solar dehydrator. That's one of my projects I have planned to do before fall sets in, so that I might be able to dehydrate some of the produce that God has given to us. And so you've got dehydrating, you've got smoking, you've got canning, you've got freezing, all these different means by which you can preserve food. And this, of course, helps us when we are trying to buy local and when we're trying to buy healthy food. We can buy large quantities of it, store it ourselves, and then we're not paying for the storage. We're just paying for the good food. And then number six, consider the needs of the purchaser. By this I mean, look at ways in which you can contribute to the farm production and not just be a drain on the farm production. Of course, one of those things is cost. In fact, there's really three things that go into a business. There is the cost or the price, there is the service, and there is the quality. So if you want really high quality and you want to have really high service and have your food delivered to you, you know, in a box all nice with your name on it at a certain drop site or something like that, well, you're going to pay more versus somebody who is willing to come out to the farm and purchase the product at the farm. The farmer then doesn't have to pay for the expenses of driving out somewhere. And so you are able to contribute significantly to the bottom line of the farmer that way, because those things are offset. So remember that there's only three things that go into the production of something. There's the quality, there's the service, and there's the cost. And you can't be the highest quality, highest service, and the lowest cost. And so you need to consider that. So delivery versus pickup. Word of mouth marketing. You know, the best way that you can support your local farmer is by telling other people about him. The best way that you can to make sure that others are following what you are doing is to tell them how you've done it and to let others know about the farm that you frequent for your food. And so, word of mouth marketing. The farmer doesn't have to pay anything for this. In fact, this is a free benefit and one of the best. And so, consider the needs of the producer, word of mouth marketing. Also, you want to consider the value of the food and the producer at a real price. I mentioned earlier about the cost and how you can't have the highest quality and the highest service and the lowest cost. They just don't go together. You've got to be able to give somewhere in order to achieve that other thing. And so the value of the food that the producer produces needs to be considered. And, you know, it's a great thing when a farmer can be respected and can be valued by the consumer of the farm in such a way that they are able to make a sustainable living. They are able to live the kind of life that their clients are living when they're producing that kind of good food. And so when you're able to transfer that kind of value, the importance of it into the marketplace, and everybody wins when that does and when that happens. And so here are some considerations, and hopefully this has been a good show for you in helping you think through some of the issues related to your food. You know, I think one thing that we tend to do is that we tend to not really think about, you know, where our food is coming from. We just kind of purchase maybe at the lowest price, or we just purchase whatever we want without really considering what goes into it. And so hopefully this show helps you with that. Hopefully it gets you to be able to think about some of these issues, to make some choices, and to evaluate what needs to be evaluated. And with that, this has been Steve Donahue with the Legacy Podcast, helping you build a multi-generational legacy of abundance. What will you do today to build your legacy?